I'm wondering about, do you have to walk the walk? You know, you and I were talking about Hawaii. In Hawaii, you're not judged by what you claim or how you brag. The first question here is, do you do what you say? As we talk tonight, the only thing I can brag about is everything I'll tell you that I try to do in my own life, and that I've written about in this book in terms of the research. I try to walk that walk. And if you ask the gurus about this and the well-known names that we are trusting our life to, we really believe that you've got to express your anger. We think you've got to get in touch with your inner feelings. You just said it better than anybody else can say it, George, when you said, look, I'm going to paraphrase what you said. Our problems don't rest within us. They rest between us. There's something much more. And if we keep looking inside, Molly Ivers is an interesting author and writer. I'm sure you know her from the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And she had breast cancer. I think she wrote a book called Who Needs Breasts Anywhere? Anyway. And she said in there, you know, in terms of getting in touch with my emotions, I treat them like long-distance relatives. Once in a while, I give them a call, but I don't want to call too much. They might come to stay. So you don't need to get in touch with your feelings. You don't need to look inside. You don't need to always think positively. And when I was dying of cancer, and people would come in and say to me, for example, you got to have hope. That's another one we'll talk about tonight. I thought, wait a minute. Hope means I got to give up now for something better later. I'm lucky right now that I can hold food down. I want to enjoy now. So tonight, I want to examine all these things we've taken now as the McMorals, these platitudes of life that we think they must be right. Everybody believes that you've got to get your anger out. Everybody believes that you have this poor, wounded inner child. I think it's time we aborted that inner child and started paying attention to our outer elder, for heaven's sakes.
How many of the self-help gurus out there have really not tapped into what I was just talking about?
I can't find many in my research. When I did the work for this book, the last self-help book, I was looking for how many people have tapped into this. Are they? And we're not talking about just, quote, mysticism. We're talking about the something more. This idea of even think, you know, self-help is based on self. And your whole show for all these years has been looking for something more than just that one lonely, self-consumed individual. It's beyond that. And this self-help focuses just on the self. It encourages us to focus inside our own head. And there's some interesting, good research on this idea that the self is one of the greatest paradoxes of human evolution. It's like, you know, the sort of the fire stolen from Prometheus. It made us powerful to some way, but what a terrible cost. Now we got this chatter in our mind all the time. We're thinking about ourselves all the time. We're egocentric. We're thinking about our reputation, who we are. Can I be skinnier? Can I be faster? Can I be bigger? Can I be better? And we cannot just realize a profound fact I learned when I was dying.
You said, go ahead, Paul. I don't want to interrupt your phrase here.
I'm just really concerned that we have to, if we're going to be working for a wonderful life, sometimes a good life is good enough.
Sometimes it is. And especially when you realize that.
There's a lot secret.
That absolutely. You said one thing that I find very interesting, and you said there's nothing wrong with thinking negatively sometimes. Explain that for me.
It's crucial, and that's one of the tenets of the McMorals of self-help. Be a positive thinker. When I was dying of cancer, they said, boy, you seem to be crying and thinking negatively. I said, I'm dying here, for heaven's sakes. What's wrong with negative thinking? Negative thinking is not, I repeat, not a symptom. Not because Paul Pearsall's...
Well, let's phrase it, though. What's your definition of negative thinking? Because there are different ways of being negative. Here's an example. There are some people out there who will think negatively about other people, almost like sending a curse on them.
Right.
I think that's bad. I think it can turn around and haunt the person who sends that kind of negative energy. Boom.
Oh, there is no doubt. That's actually, there's a lot of good research on how the ancients stole our best new ideas, and ancient cultures believe that you do that kind of thing, it's going to come back to you. No, the negative thinking I'm talking about is not about other people. I'm talking about the self-help philosophy that you should not think negatively about yourself. And I'm saying that negative thinking is crucial sometimes to identifying what could go wrong. I don't mean to make light of it, but a lot of people I know love to think negatively because they love pleasant surprises about when things turn out better, for heaven's sake.
So, I think to learn, you do have to think negatively. I think you have to assess your life. I mean, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, Paul, and to me, when I think about them, they're negative thinks. They're negative thoughts about what I might have been thinking years ago. But you have to think that way in order to correct them.
There's no doubt, but all I had was the tyranny of these books of think positively, use positive affirmations, use positive imagery. Nothing wrong with some of that, but that became a tyranny of healing. You had to do it that way. I wanted to think about, they said, don't be thinking about what can go wrong. I needed to do that so I could develop strategies to deal with it. So when you put the pressure on those of us who suffer sometimes not to think negatively, heck, we think we're a failure at that. We'll talk later tonight, for example, about this grief counseling stuff. Grief counseling is a ruse. It doesn't work for most people. It's not necessary. I use a cartoon when I lecture to medical students, and I've got a couple of people around a crime scene looking at the body, and they say, oh, what's that up in the sky? Are those vultures? And they said, no, here come the grief counselors. And they come in and counsel.
Man.
There's no data to show that grief counseling for most people is essential. And not only that, there's no data to show that psychotherapy is all that helpful for most people, not more helpful than talking to a good friend.
You're a neuropsychologist, for crying out loud.
Absolutely, but I, like many psychologists, who are finally looking at what's called evidence-based therapy. Remember that term, evidence-based therapy.
What does that mean?
That means based on what the journals say, what good science says, and not just, like you said, and looking for something more out there than somebody's own opinion of how life ought to be led because they think they have a program they can sell you. That's the danger of the self-help movement. It's this celebrity kind of approach to life, telling you how you should get real, what you should do about your poor little inner child. And if we don't break free of these, that really has become America's religion. People think it really has replaced religion and spirituality and looking for much more. Look at the simple language we've made into almost pathology. Being worried now is called generalized anxiety disorder. If you don't know what you're worried about, you've got free-floating anxiety. If you're shy, you've got social anxiety disorder. If you're really shy, you've got social phobia. If you're upset by an unpleasant situation, you're traumatized. Everybody, you don't have a heart attack. You're a victim of heart attack. This has become a therapy nation, a pathology nation, and a bunch of books will tell you how to repair it. And we need to question the hypotheses upon which those approaches are based.